we can see that illuminated sign that marks the end of the journey.
This vaccine will help us get past this pandemic once and for all.
We need people to have faith that this vaccine is safe and that they should take it. The thing that's going to stop us from seeing the end of this pandemic are people going, oh, I'm not so sure.
Hello, you're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. I'm Roger Hearing.
And good afternoon, I'm Caroline Hepke.
Now, Cornwall is getting ready to host the leaders of the world's seven most powerful democracies as Boris Johnson prepares to host the G7. US President Joe Biden arrives in the UK in a few hours' time on his first overseas trip since he was inaugurated. Surprisingly, it's also going to be the first time that Johnson and Biden have actually met.
But ahead of the summit, there is the thorny issue that threatens to overshadow the G7, Northern Ireland. Brexit Minister David Frost is holding a meeting with the European Commission Vice President Maroš Šefčovič today in an effort to resolve the trade dispute around the post-Brexit protocol.
And meanwhile, England is preparing for what may or may not be the June 21st opening of the economy post-COVID. But how are other nations dealing with the post-COVID moment? Wales has had some of the strictest measures within the United Kingdom, but is now easing carefully. Joining us now, very pleased to say, is Delyth Jewell, who's a member of the Senedd from Plaid Cymru. Delyth, thank you for being with us today. What stage of reopening is Wales at now? What's the direction at the moment?
So we're in a relatively positive position in terms of case numbers in Wales. So we are able to open up quite a lot of things, mainly outdoors at the moment. We aren't as tied to an arbitrary date as they are in Westminster. So I'm sure that some of your listeners will know that the Westminster system at the moment, the Westminster government, is quite obsessed with the date of the 21st of June. That's been dubbed Freedom Day, and that's meant to be when all of the restrictions are meant to come to an end. I don't think that is going to happen. Now, in Wales, the decision has been to be more cautious, and that's something that my party, Plaid Cymru, has welcomed. In the last few days, we have allowed more outdoor sporting activities to happen, outdoor concerts, festivals, up to 10,000 people sitting or 4,000 people standing can happen. Up to 30 people can now meet outdoors, and including private gardens. So the focus is on what we can do outside. The government in Wales has not kind of tied itself to saying when indoor activities will be eased up more. Mm. Now, that is very partly to do with the fact that there is this concern about the Delta variant. We do need to be vigilant. And the numbers are still far fewer in Wales than they are in parts of England, but it is a rising concern.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that the Westminster government would respond to that by saying, you know, the vaccine rollout has been extremely strong and that they are also data dependent and not just tied to a date. Do you think that the Cardiff administration is really getting it right here? As you say, cases are very low in Wales.
Well, obviously, we know with a pandemic situation, things are very unlikely to stay stagnant, unfortunately. And yes, the vaccine rollout, particularly in Wales, actually, we've been leading the world, and our thanks have to go to our amazing NHS staff and volunteers for all of the wonderful work that they've done with that. But the Delta variant, the more that we find out about that in terms of how much more transmissible it seems to be, how it could lead to further hospitalizations, the data is still not quite determinative then at the moment. I think that being cautious and being more vigilant is the right approach. I mean, obviously, we are in favour of lifting all restrictions as soon as it's safe to do so. We've called for weeks for park runs and grassroots football matches to be opened up. So we have welcomed the new reopening then that's happened this week. But I really think that saying, right, by this particular date in the future, everything will end, and that's been in the diary then for a long time, I really think that that was a foolhardy thing to do, because we can't be held hostage to how a virus is allowed to develop, particularly because of what the UK government failed to do in terms of they failed to put India on the red list because they were so desperate to get a trade deal, which has allowed this new variant to spread far more quickly in the UK than it has in other parts of mainland Europe.
But Delyth, what I'm taking from this is that what you're doing in Wales does seem to you, certainly, and to many, to be a slightly better way of proceeding than the Westminster government has got in. And, well, I mean, let me put the point then to you. It's a Labour administration in Cardiff, isn't it? It's this is the work of a Labour party, a Labour administration, which got a big vote, it seems, perhaps in gratitude for that in the most recent elections. So are you going to pay tribute to the Labour administration?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm very glad that we are in a relatively far better position than the Westminster government has people in England. I still think that we need to have more information on a number of different things. There are areas where I'd like the Welsh government to be improving. I would like more support to be available for businesses. In Scotland at the moment, any pubs that are going to be reopening are eligible for reopening grants of £18,000. In Wales, the maximum is £7,500. And there is a little bit of a crisis that's developing in terms of a lack of staff in the hospitality sector. So, yes, I am so grateful, and I do pay tribute to, like I say, the NHS staff and volunteers that have led the vaccine rollout. And, yes, I am very glad that the Welsh Government has relatively done far better than this than the UK government. But that doesn't mean to say that I'm going to stop scrutinising where we need to and where there needs to be more support.
What about independence? Do you think that the case for Welsh independence has become stronger during the pandemic?
I certainly think that it has, because as COVID has ravaged so much of our economy, of our daily lives over the past year and a bit, I think that people in Wales have grown to appreciate how much better a situation we are in because there is a government in Wales that can make its own decisions, that can determine when, for example, we were allowed the stay-home message to stay far longer in Wales early on in the 2020 first wave than they did in England. Now, there have been a number of occasions as well when it has become apparent just how little of a priority Wales is to Westminster. So, for example, when there was a firebreak period that the Welsh Government decided to go into in November, so when cases were rising later on in 2020, the Chief Medical Officer of Wales, I believe all of the Chief Medical Officers, actually, of the UK, said that there needed to be a firebreak. We needed to go into a kind of a mini lockdown. And Wales decided to go it alone to do this because the UK government was dragging its feet. And the Welsh government asked the Treasury to make sure that the furlough scheme continued so that workers in Wales wouldn't lose out because the government was trying to protect them. The Treasury refused. And 2 weeks later, the UK government decided that England would go into lockdown because cases had started to rise more in England. And lo and behold, the furlough scheme was then extended because it suited England, which meant that workers in Wales, many of them will have lost their jobs or lost out because of that. Now, there are so many examples that have happened over the past year that have shown that Wales just isn't the priority for Westminster. So that, combined with seeing how much better things can go relatively in Wales when we make our own decisions, I think that the clamouring call for independence is certainly going to rise.
Right. Well, but Des, let me put on the point that your vote in the most recent election didn't seem to suggest necessarily the Welsh people are behind you in that. And can I put you a question posed very prominently by Wales Online this week? Why has the SNP been so much more successful than Plaid?
You know, I think it's a fair question. I think that the election that happened in May was very much a COVID election. It was an election in this very particular moment. Now, the SNP in Scotland, the Labour Party in Wales, and the Conservatives in England, I think all had a boost because they were the incumbent government parties. They were the ones who were delivering the vaccine strategies. They were the ones who were seen to be helping the people of those different nations. Now, I think that inevitably the context of that was set by the fact that, for example, in Wales, Mark Drake, for the First Minister, was on television almost daily, and so he had a lot more exposure. I still think that actually the vote that we saw in Wales, in terms of there being a kind of overwhelming vote of support for further powers for Wales, for a rejection of the muscular unionism of the Westminster government. And by the way, there had been another dimension in Wales. There was a party called Abolish the Welsh Assembly, which was actually trying to say that the legislature in Wales should be abolished, they failed to get any seats. So there were lots of different dynamics going on in Wales. And I think that we have to see it in the context of the time. It was a COVID election, but there are other factors at play here as well. A Yes Cymru, which is a membership support group, which is not affiliated with any political party, but it's in favour of independence. At the beginning of 2020, they had something like 2,000 members. By now, they've got more than 18,000. I think they're close to 19,000 now. I mean, the voices in support of independence are rising. They're getting stronger. That's only going to happen more and more in the coming months as the constitutional crisis gets even stronger.
Just briefly, what extra powers would you want from Westminster? We noticed that your Senate colleagues in Cardiff have called for more devolution, effectively. What would the Senate want?
Well, thank you for raising that, Caroline. We've got a debate on this evening in the Senate. So some of the powers that we are saying that Wales should have in the Senate, they range from having powers over justice and policing to control of the railways in Wales. We have 11% of the railway track in Wales, but we only get 1% of the investment. We're saying that the Crown Estate, which is part of even the waters off the coast of Wales, yeah, we should get resources from that. Okay. Far-reaching powers, and we really, because things aren't going to stay as they are, we need to fight for the powers for people of Wales.
Let's have a look at what else is making news in the world of politics. Freedom Day could be delayed, according to the Chancellor, Caroline.
Yes, so Rishi Sunak apparently is prepared to accept delaying the end of lockdown measures beyond the 21st of June. Now, that would clear one potential hurdle to what is really a politically contentious decision. Back in March, you'll remember, Sunak extended the furlough scheme to the end of September. The Guardian newspaper reports the Chancellor would be ready to countenance a four-week delay now in terms of the complete reopening in England.
Yeah, so possibly towards the end of July. Meanwhile, the government has sent military personnel to help with COVID testing and vaccinations in Manchester and Lancashire. Greater Manchester Mayor Andy Burnham has called for more vaccines in the region. Robert Jenrick, who's the Community Secretary, told the BBC it's better to continue to work down the age categories on a national basis rather than adopt a regional or geographical approach.
So it's the return of the sort of centre versus the regions battle, it would seem, in terms of the pandemic and vaccines. Well, another new measure, quite interesting, from the UK today to tackle greenwashing. A new panel called the Green Technical Advisory Group apparently is going to oversee delivery of a UK green taxonomy that would define the requirements for financial investment that would be deemed environmentally sustainable. This, according to the Treasury. So the fight against climate change is high on this government's domestic agenda. So having a clear and common definition of green will support that goal. And of course, Roger, it follows similar efforts in Europe.
And another battle in the culture wars. It's one that's been grabbing the headlines on many of the papers this morning. Staff at Magdalen College, Oxford, have received threatening messages over the removal of a portrait of the Queen from a common room. The president of the college, Dinah Rose, has defended the right of students after they agreed that they would vote to remove a portrait of the Queen from their middle common room for graduates, claiming it's representing an unwelcoming symbol of recent colonial history. Well, the Education Secretary, Gavin Williamson, called the move simply absurd.
Well, now to the main story this week. This weekend's G7 summit in Cornwall. It will be a key moment, won't it, for Britain post-Brexit and for Boris Johnson on the global stage. It comes after G7 finance ministers agreed a global tax deal and also ahead of COP26, the climate change summit, but also at a time when Britain and the rest of the world are still battling the COVID pandemic. Well, joining us now to discuss this and more are Bloomberg opinion columnist Therese Raphael. Therese, look, this is really a key test, isn't it? The G7 meeting in Cornwall for the clout of Britain. Now,
yeah, there's just so much at stake at this G7 meeting. We're so used to just kind of brushing by these great global confabs, but you know, for the first time in a long time, they're all meeting in person. It's the year that the UK is also hosting the COP26 summit. It's a time when Britain is trying to establish itself or reestablish itself, as a post-Brexit middling but influential power on the world stage. So, you know, what are the priorities here for Boris Johnson? I think, you know, first and foremost, it's climate action and to try to build a consensus that can be consolidated at the COP26 summit. That, you know, would seem to be pretty straightforward, but it's less than straightforward in reality because there are, countries that will, that will not want to get rid of coal-fired power plants and that sort of thing. And so there are a lot of issues around COP26 that will be hashed out there, but there a whole host of other issues as well, making vaccines available to the developing world, stimulating the economic recovery, free trade. You know, Britain in the post-Brexit order is meant to be a big champion of free trade, but you still have the dispute settlement procedures in the World Trade Organization being held up. And while President Biden has been friendlier to the WTO, that remains an outstanding issue. And then there's also Boris Johnson's agenda of promoting this D10 alliance of democracies. Can he turn that from a sort of idea into a working reality? And what will that mean for the global order in terms of confronting some of the trends from China that America, Britain, and other Western democracies are imposing? So there's lots at stake here. It seems a big agenda for a very short conference, but a lot of this work has been done in advance. There have been multiple meetings and Sherpa consultation. So, you know, we'll expect that they have teed up a lot of conclusions already.
Yeah, but I guess there's not necessarily going to be consensus on everything. So what would look like victory as far as Boris Johnson's concerned?
Yeah, I think victory would be, some very robust statement on climate action, also some kind of broad commitments from the G7 to increase vaccine production, because right now the G7 is divided over how to ensure more equitable global vaccine access. So India and South Africa, who are invited guests at the summit, they had proposed that the WTO temporarily waive intellectual property protections for vaccines. Progress on that would be a win. And anything that smacks of a reinvigorated basically club of democracies and that is willing to act in opposition to authoritarian tendencies, for example, in China or Russia, that will be a success for Britain. But I think, mainly Boris Johnson is looking to establish his credibility on the international stage and have a very good summit in the run-up to COP26.
And how critical then is that sort of the personal relationship, the relationship between Johnson and Biden, who, strangely, I read, have actually never met in person? The special relationship's always much more important to the UK than the US.
Yeah, Boris Johnson reportedly doesn't like the term special relationship, quite understandably. It always feels a bit condescending and dated. To the extent that personal relationship precedes their actual meeting, it's been quite a, one might say, quite a tense one because obviously of Ireland and Northern Ireland. And now we've seen, renewed tensions over the Northern Ireland Protocol. That said, I think, the relationship between the UK and the US is so broad. It covers such a range of issues. There's so much in common that you're going to see Biden, with an outstretched hand, looking to find common ground, but not quite offering all the things that the UK would like. There won't be a trade deal immediately on the table. I would be very surprised if there was. Just even the optics and the body language and anything coming out of that will be very interesting.
Therese, let's move on to what must be in the back of Boris Johnson's mind, even if the G7 is definitely in the front of it. And that, I guess, is the debate about what could happen in 2 weeks' time, or maybe won't. The June the 21st, the moment of the reopening, a lot more debate about this. Lines now from Rishi Sunak, at least that have been leaked, suggesting perhaps he would be in favour of another delay, perhaps 2 weeks, perhaps 3 weeks, perhaps 4 weeks. Where are we on this issue now?
I think it's pretty significant that Sunak has come out, sounding favourable toward a delay, because he's been the reported lockdown skeptic, for some of this time, or at least, keen to get the economy back on track. And, now we have a number of ministers really suggesting that this June 21 date is going to be pushed back, at least for a substantial number of the restrictions that were due to be lifted. What does it mean? I think there's far more downside for Boris Johnson in reopening and either having to see hospital admissions spike or having to lock down again later and having gotten this wrong, because he's always said that the reopening dates were based on the data that they see and the four tests that he set out coming up. So I think this week is a crucial week for data. It could be that the data shows that June 21st is fine. I don't think anyone would be surprised at all right now to see them push back that date. And probably politically it doesn't hurt him too much. It'll be a disappointment, particularly for the hospitality and the retail sectors, and also clubs and theaters and all of the parts of the economy that were counting on June 21st. But a couple of weeks is not going to make or break things for Boris Johnson politically.
No, absolutely. Andrew Lloyd Webber, for example, sounding very irate about theatres not being able to reopen. But look, how much damage does it do then, in the eyes of voters who have gone along with these very strict measures, kind of in some ways unexpectedly? Will people just take it on the chin if it's an extra few weeks?
Yeah, I mean, it's with my sort of American hat on, I'm hugely surprised at the extraordinary patience of British voters. They just seem very willing to accept restrictions in the name of public health, even when the risk seems quite low. In the U.S., we've just seen very little tolerance for that kind of thing and widespread reopening, and some would argue with very little downside lately. But at the moment, people seem quite stoic. Now, I think with the better weather and holiday plans being canceled and domestic travel now looking, the only option, hotels booking up, I just wonder whether people are going to get a little more impatient. So I think whether this is delayed 2 weeks or a month is actually a substantial question, that there's a big difference between a couple of weeks delay and finding that you don't reopen fully until the end of July.
Yeah. Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.